This is Free Speech Radio News for Thursday, September 29th, 2011. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina. Coming up, Alabama's strict immigration law goes into effect, expanding powers for the police and setting up more legal battles. In Argentina, a push to legalize abortion sets off a strong debate just ahead of a nationwide election. And we'll go to India, where 2 weeks of protests continue calling for an independent state. Those stories and more, but first, this news.
I'm Alice Olstein with headlines for FSRN. Violence continues in Syria as protesters clashed with security forces in Rastan. And in Damascus, supporters of President Assad threw eggs and tomatoes at the vehicle of U.S. Ambassador Robert Ford as he drove to meet with an opposition leader. When he reached the embassy, the crowd attempted to storm the building. Despite this ongoing violence, efforts to pass sanctions against Syria have stalled in the UN Security Council. U.S. State Department spokesperson Victoria Nuland told reporters today that the U.S. will continue to push for sanctions.
We want a resolution with teeth. We want a resolution that makes absolutely clear to the Assad regime that the violence needs to end and that there will be consequences.
The Security Council hopes to pass a compromise resolution this week that avoids immediate sanctions but condemns the escalating violence, both by Assad's forces and protesters. Egypt's popular Socialist Alliance Party has become the first leftist party to successfully register for the upcoming parliamentary elections after collecting over 5,000 signatures this week. Lillian Bakhter has the story.
Popular Socialist Alliance Party members have been mobilizing youth, workers, and people in rural and slum areas. The party was founded after the Egyptian Revolution began, with the aim of uniting different leftist groups. Participating in the November elections will give the party a chance to introduce their social and economic justice platform, monitor any inconsistencies in the elections, and possibly gain some seats in the People's Assembly. Other political parties are threatening to boycott the upcoming elections over rules they say allow for Mubarak loyalists to use their wealth and influence to gain seats. Tomorrow, the Popular Socialist Alliance will participate in a nationwide protest demanding that the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces end the ongoing military trials and emergency law, shorten the transition period to civil rule, and begin a more inclusive process of rewriting the Constitution. The People's Assembly elections will begin on November 28th, but presidential elections are still a year away. Lillian Bakhter, FSRN.
Saudi King Abdullah has overturned a court ruling that sentenced a woman to be lashed 10 times for driving. Shaima Justina had been found guilty of violating the country's ban on female drivers, causing a backlash from women's rights advocates, some of whom began publicly protesting the law in June. The events follow the announcement this week by King Abdullah that women will be allowed to participate in municipal elections in 2015 and serve on the all-male Shura Council by 2013. Republican Senators John McCain, Mark Kirk, Lindsey Graham, and Marco Rubio are visiting Libya. The group met with top officials in the National Transitional Council in Tripoli today, and McCain spoke later at a press conference.
The United States and the world must remain engaged in Libya. We must continue returning the frozen funds of the Gaddafi regime to their rightful owners, the Libyan people.
Civil servants in Greece occupied federal buildings this morning, responding to the latest round of pay cuts and tens of thousands of layoffs imposed by the government in an attempt to rein in the national debt. The Associated Press reports that workers who took over the Interior Ministry building hung a black banner from the balconies and draped the ministry's gate with a Greek flag that read, "For sale." This comes as a high-level mission from the EU, the IMF, and the European Central Bank arrives today to resume their interrupted audit of the country. The delegation had left Greece 4 weeks ago, saying the nation hadn't implemented reforms fast enough to qualify for more bailout funds. The Greek parliament passed a controversial property tax this week to raise some revenue, but still needs more bailout money to avoid defaulting on its debt in October. Nigeria's upper parliament is pushing for a law that further criminalizes same-sex marriage and threatens both LGBT couples and any witnesses with imprisonment. Sam Olukoya reports from Lagos.
The proposed law also prescribes jail terms for any person that witnesses or aids the solemnization of same-sex marriages. The lawmakers say it is important for Nigeria to act fast to prevent the growing trend of same-sex marriage in other parts of the world from spreading to the country. The gay community in Nigeria is growing, especially in the younger generation, and getting more visible. But much of Nigerian society remains intolerant, and the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission has documented many instances of violence and discrimination against the gay community. Many, like Mayowa Adebola, find homosexuality unacceptable for religious and cultural reasons.
Homosexuality is spreading. As a Christian, I've read it in the Bible when Jesus is coming, this kind of things will be happening. Men marrying men and women marrying women. It's really something we should not tolerate in this part of the world because it's not even an African culture. It's not an African thing. So I think strict measures should be taken.
Given the strong opposition to homosexuality in Nigeria, it is expected that the president will sign the proposed law when Parliament passes it to him. Sam Lukoya, FSRN, Lagos.
And that's headlines for FSRN. From Washington, D.C., I'm Alice Olstein.
I'm Dorian Marina in Los Angeles. The Obama administration is moving ahead with a military tribunal at Guantanamo Bay. It's the first death penalty case in military courts under Obama. On trial is Abd al-Rahman al-Nashiri. And as Matt Laszlo reports, the U.S.'s use of torture on al-Nashiri is clouding the judicial process.
For 5 years, al-Nashiri has been held at Guantanamo Bay under charges of war crimes. The government alleges he was the mastermind behind the USS Cole bombing that killed 17 sailors in 2000. Ramzi Khatam is a professor of law at the City University of New York. He says the president is doing a 180-degree turnaround now that he sanctioned a military court for the trial.
As some will recall, candidate Obama had criticized the military commissions and pledged to shut them down. But once in office, he opted to preserve them and modify them instead.
Former head of the CIA Michael Hayden has admitted that the U.S. government used waterboarding and other techniques that are widely regarded as torture to interrogate al-Nashiri.
There are so many unresolved foundational questions about the constitutionality of the system and the legality of some of the charges that are brought. And that's even before we get to sort of the more case-specific issues of whether particular bits of evidence were extracted through torture and whether cases should be dismissed because individual defendants had been through torture and coercion.
Guantanamo critics want suspects tried in civilian courts, but some, including al-Nashiri's civilian counsel, Richard Kamen, don't think the government has enough evidence to prosecute the case in a traditional U.S. court.
It's really troubling that we would be, in the United States, trying to use the draconian sanction of the death penalty in the context of this second-class and expedient justice. That raises a whole host of problems. Hopefully, in the fullness of time, those problems will be corrected, but it's clearly going to be a big fight for the next, as long as this case is going on.
A call to the Defense Department was not returned. Kamen says these military courts have a lower threshold for acceptable evidence, which diminishes people's rights, especially in a case where the life of a prisoner is at stake.
Our suspicion is that that is because they only evidence they will have, if they have any evidence, is either statements taken from people in Yemen who in some way implicate Mr. Nashiri, or perhaps they'll try and use his statements that he may have made while he was being tortured.
For those who voted for the president in order to end some thorny aspects of U.S. foreign policy, this case is bringing back reminders of the last administration. Bruce Fine runs a public advocacy firm.
It, in my judgment, shows that the Obama administration is simply a continuation of the Bush-Cheney wrongful conception of what 9/11 and the conflict with international terrorism is about.
Fine, who is also an advisor to Ron Paul's presidential campaign, says the whole notion of a military tribunal flies in the face of the U.S. justice system.
This is an attempt to use a military commission. It's a kangaroo court that combines judge, jury, and prosecutor in a single branch, what the Founding Fathers called the very definition of tyranny, to prosecute a crime that should be prosecuted in civilian courts.
al-Nashiri's case represents the first military tribunal death penalty case brought by President Obama's White House. He's expected to be arraigned over the next month, and the Pentagon is considering showing the proceedings in the United States via closed-circuit TV. Matt Laszlo, FSRN, Washington.
In Alabama, parts of a strict immigration law go into effect today. The law requires police officers to check the residency status of people stopped during traffic stops, allows police to detain suspects without bond, and authorities to check the immigration status of school children. This follows a ruling Wednesday in which a federal judge blocked portions of the law while allowing others to go forward. Alabama passed the law in June, but it's been held up by several court challenges. Immigrant rights groups and religious leaders have vowed to appeal the ruling. For more, we go to Victor Spizzini. He's lead organizer for community engagement and education for the Hispanic Interest Coalition of Alabama. We're reaching him in Birmingham. Victor, welcome to FSRN.
Thank you for having me today.
So U.S. District Judge Sharon Blackburn blocked some aspects of the law and allowed others to take effect. First, let's take a look at what's new for Alabama today. What new rules guide police stops and detaining of people?
Yes, we are deeply disappointed with this ruling. And like you mentioned, even though there were some important wins, parts of the law that were not enjoined and are currently in effect, concerns, for instance, K through 12 education. New enrollees, new students being enrolled in the schools, their parents would be required to provide documentation. If in the birth certificate it appears they were born outside of the U.S., they would have to provide documentation of their immigration status. And so this is something that is very concerning to us. And of course, parents have the right to refuse to answer those types of questions when enrolling their schools, and this would only affect students who are not currently in the school system. However, we've already heard of cases of people who are deciding not to send their children to school, and that's very troubling for us because then they would be breaking truancy laws. And so this is why we're very disappointed in this ruling. And also, as far as interaction with police is concerned, basically the whole reasonably suspicious part of this law was not blocked, and we're very concerned that this will lead to more racial profiling.
Well, that's been one concern with the law in Arizona, and that also led to some local police opposing the immigration law there. That was the ambiguity in determining suspicion, setting up, you know, possible problems and lawsuits. Do you know how officers are being trained on this in Alabama?
We are not sure. We know that the Birmingham Police Chief, A.C. Roper, and Jefferson County Sheriff, in which Birmingham is inside of Jefferson County Sheriff Mike Hale, both of these officers filed affidavits joining the Department of Justice lawsuit against this law. And so they had expressed concern that this was an unfunded mandate, that they did not have the resources to train their officers in how to, you know, do immigration stops or how to conduct immigration questions during a regular traffic stop. So this is very concerning to us.
You also mentioned the effect on education, on schools. You work with families and parents there. What have you been hearing about how it could affect their decisions for their children?
Well, just there is a lot of fear right now in the immigrant communities and a lot of confusion, and just people are afraid, and they're, you know, it's very hard for us to try and provide the most accurate information possible because there is so much misinformation going on as a result of the fear and of the kind of panic mode that everybody is in.
Well, you mentioned the confusion that comes from this. One thing you said is that parents do have the right to not provide a certain information. What kind of accurate information would you like parents to know?
We would like for them to continue sending their children to school. If they're already in that school system, then they cannot, you know, ask them for their immigration status. And if they are asked that, they can always not answer. That is their right, and that is what our attorneys are asking that they do, that they refuse to answer those questions. and that if they are asked those questions, to report to the Southern Poverty Law Center about those incidents.
One part of the law that Judge Blackburn suspended is one that would have blocked some immigrants from enrolling in public colleges and universities. How is that going to affect people?
That is correct, and we are pleased that she did block that part. And so that is one of the few victories we had from her decision, that our undocumented students who do wish to go to college would be able to enroll in, would be able to continue to enroll in our public colleges and universities in the state.
Now, the decision came on Wednesday. Let's talk about the next steps here. The U.S. Justice Department brought challenges to the Alabama law using the same argument in the Arizona case, that the state law is unconstitutional because it conflicts with federal law. What's next in this appeal process?
Well, the Hispanic Interest Coalition of Alabama, with the support of the Southern Poverty Law Center and the American Civil Liberties Union and the National Immigration Law Center, we are appealing the judge's decision immediately to try to enjoin all parts of the law until the next hearing, and that is our current strategy.
And when is that next hearing?
I don't believe that a date has been set yet.
I see, but you're seeking it to be enjoined until that hearing takes place.
Correct.
Victor Spizzini is lead organizer for community engagement and education at the Hispanic Interest Coalition in Birmingham, Alabama. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
Protests continue today in Manhattan's financial district as the Occupy Wall Street encampment entered its 13th day. Demonstrators are drawing attention to what they say is an unequal and corrupt financial system in the United States. FSRN's Kelly Benjamin is at the occupation in New York and files this report.
For almost 2 weeks, Occupy Wall Street protesters have held their daily assembly meetings under the watchful gaze of the NYPD in Zuccotti Park in downtown Manhattan. In lieu of amplification, they employ something called a people's mic, where the crowd at the meetings repeat the statements of the speakers. It works something like this.
Welcome stations.
Welcome stations.
Are very important.
Are very important.
So we can take people off the streets.
So we can take people off the streets.
And get them to join this movement.
And get them to join this movement.
That's how we do it.
That's how we do it.
Most of the meetings revolve around logistics, food donations, laundry, sleeping arrangements, and whether the group is prepared to make demands and how to go about that. Lively discussions on the state of the economy, corporate personhood, and the nature of capitalism take place daily with tourists, commuters, and the curious who make their way through the half-acre park. One question that regularly comes up is why the protesters have been allowed to stay.
It's not clear whether the building could have anyone evicted off this space because they made an agreement with the city to build this spot for the public so they can build their building higher and make more money and rent more office space and what have you.
That's Brian Murphy, a New York attorney who has offered to represent Occupy Wall Street protesters pro bono.
This public park is a semi-public park. That the building across the street, street right there, One Liberty Plaza, was allowed to build as high as it did because they created a public space for people to, you know, to use. Gather, have lunch, things like that. Okay. Now, the definition of public space sort of comes into play here because you have a semi-public place.
The New York Times reported this week that the developers of the 54-story One Liberty Plaza were allowed to add 5,000 square feet to their building back in 1968 in exchange for creating a public park. Zuccotti Park's owners, Brookfield Office Properties, released a statement that they are concerned about the conditions in the park, but didn't elaborate on what those conditions are, or whether they would ask the protesters to leave. Meanwhile, a steady stream of supporters from Michael Moore to Cornel West to Susan Sarandon have visited the park to offer their encouragement. On Wednesday, New York City Council member and former Black Panther Charles Barron stopped by.
So I'm here because Wall Street is a cesspool of greedy, avaricious businessmen and women who are not paying their fair share. I'm here because the money on Wall Street, coming from Bear Stearns and Smith Barney and Goldman Sachs and the stock market, they have profited to the tune of $64 billion in 2009 when everybody else was in crises, $28 billion in 2010 profit, and they're projecting over $20 billion in 2011 as the income gap between the rich and the poor widen, as more Americans go into poverty, as more homelessness occurs. So I'm here to say that this is how revolutions start, with just a small little spark in the corner of town.
As occupation demonstrations spread to other cities across the United States, the Occupy Wall Street protesters vow to stay indefinitely. Kelly Benjamin, FSRN, New York City.
In Argentina, reproductive rights advocates are pushing lawmakers to ease restrictions on abortion. Most countries in Latin America have made abortion illegal, as is the case in Argentina. But human rights groups say the ban is harming women. They point to illegal abortions as the leading cause of maternal death in the country. President Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner is a strong supporter of the ban on abortion. But for the first time, a bill was presented in Argentina's National Congress to discuss the legalization of abortion, and that has spurred a lively debate both inside and outside of Congress. FSRN's Marie Trigona reports from Buenos Aires.
Hundreds of women with green scarves wrapped around their necks held a sit-in protest in front of Argentina's National Congress to demand that abortion be legalized in the South American nation. They also carried green banners, the color symbolizing the campaign for legalized abortion in Argentina, with the slogan, "Not one more death from clandestine abortion." Since 1990, Latin American women have held protests like these every September 28th to mark the day for the decriminalization of abortion in Latin America and the Caribbean. Activist Noelia Flores Afit explains why they decided to sit out in front of Congress during rush hour traffic.
That Congress has begun to debate the law is a positive step. But we want a law to legalize abortion so that a woman can terminate her pregnancy under any circumstance, not only women who have been raped, but any woman who decides she doesn't want to give birth.
This polemic issue has made it to Argentina's Congress, where the legalization of abortion would be debated for the first time in the nation's history. Last year, 50 members of Congress have signed a petition supporting a bill for legal abortion. One of them, Congressional Representative Cecilia Merchan, says that lack of access to safe abortions constitutes a violation of human rights and equal protection of law for women.
It is fundamental to implement legislation and to legalize abortion, which is a reality for Argentina. More than 500,000 women terminate their pregnancies each year and must do so clandestinely. Most of the women end up hospitalized. More than 70,000 women every year from unsafe abortions are poor and young women. As state representatives, we need to respond to this reality to defend human rights, social equality, and public health.
In some Latin American countries, including Chile, El Salvador, Honduras, Nicaragua, and the Dominican Republic, abortion is banned under all circumstances, even when the mother's life is at risk. Argentina only allows abortion in cases when the woman has been raped, when the woman's life is endangered, or if a woman has a mental disability and has been raped. But according to advocacy groups, more than 170 women die in Argentina each year from illegal abortions, which constitutes the leading cause of maternal death. Valeria Ricis is an organizer from the National Campaign for the Right to Legal, Safe, and Free Abortion. She outlines the consequences of Argentina's strict abortion laws.
One of the main consequences of the current legislation is that the majority of women who carry out clandestine abortions have very little economic resources and are poor. We have many deaths each year as a consequence of these clandestine abortions. All of these deaths are preventable, and we want a law that will legalize abortion. Making it part of the public health care system will reduce the number of women who die each year from unsafe abortions.
Many lawmakers have promised to put the abortion legalization bill on the congressional agenda, but some worry that it may be too much of a political hot potato in a lead-up to presidential elections. However, international reports of Argentina's poor record on maternal mortality have put pressure on the nation to change its reproductive health legislation. Marie Trigona, FSRN, Buenos Aires.
Local leaders in India's Telangana region are calling on Prime Minister Manmohan Singh to step in as protests calling for a separate state enter a second week. The Telangana region has 10 districts, including Hyderabad, the capital of Andhra Pradesh. Protesters, including members of many of the region's political parties, have vowed to intensify their campaign. FSRN's Prabhakar Mani Tawari reports from India.
In front of Hyderabad railway station, thousands shout long live Telangana. In addition to demonstrations, several sectors have gone on strike, including teachers and electricity employees. Many are angry because government officials had earlier supported the creation of a separate Telangana state. But they are now backing out, fearing similar demands coming from other parts of the country. Ravi Shankar Prasad is leader of Bharatiya Janata Party, which supports a separate state.
I can understand political points being made, but when there is a national agitation and you say that the process of creation of Telangana has begun and then you back out, then I'm sorry, you are playing with the sentiments of the people.
Due to the strike, administration has collapsed in Telangana. It is causing heavy power cuts throughout South India. Even the temples have been shut by priests for the cause of a separate state. Schools and colleges are still closed. The industrial sector has suffered more than $20 million in losses. A. Vijay Kumar, president of Telangana Industries Association, says that the agitation is also having an impact on government.
So there is a loss of money, loss of product, and finally it is a great impact on government also. Where they can get the money if industry don't pay the taxes?
But K. Chandrasekhar Rao, leader of the Telangana Rashtra Samiti party, says they are seeking cooperation from industry.
We have to undergo some difficulties. We request all the industrialists and the people of Telangana to cooperate with the movement.
Despite the huge losses mounting up, the agitators are in no mood to stop the protests. They have plans to intensify the steer with a Hyderabad general strike this Friday. A 3-day rail blockade in the Telangana region is planned for October 9. Prabhakar Mani Tiwari, FSRN, Kolkata, India.
That's it for today's program. The newscast was produced by Catherine Kopp. Headlines editor was Alice Olstein. Our Washington, D.C. editor, Matt Laszlo. Our technical production team at KPFA Berkeley is Rose Katapchi and Janine Etter. FSRN is largely funded by listeners like you. More information is available on our website at fsrn.org. FSRN welcomes your questions, comments, and news tips. Write to us, comments@fsrn.org. For more news stories, specials, and our documentaries, visit our website, fsrn.org, and follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/fsrn. Thanks for listening. In Los Angeles, I'm Doreen Marina.